Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link there at thetrumpet.com. Today is Monday. There was an earthquake in Oklahoma. It was a big one, too. Some damage. We'll talk about that. We got some great listener emails to share with you. Germany, they're building another wall. You remember the Berlin Wall that went down? Now they're building another one to keep migrants out. An interesting write-up about religious liberty. That and other topics on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live here at 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. We are online. We're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today, looking refreshed, extra hour of sleep over the weekend.
Yeah, it was a really long day yesterday for some reason. It just, that 1 hour seemed like it made the entire day twice as long.
I kept having wonderful surprises all day because there were clocks that I forgot to change. And I was like, wow, you know, and then I'd look and be like, oh, wait, I have another hour.
It's like you gained that hour again several times.
It was a great motivator. I think I'm going to do that every day just to keep changing my clocks. So I have more time than I think that I do. But, of course, a time change here in the U.S. And then yesterday was a rainy day and kind of a wintry feeling day. So it feels like we're getting into winter now. And but some rain, so we needed that as well. We had an earthquake over the weekend. Did you feel that?
No, I didn't feel it.
Okay.
Must have really been asleep.
It was a big one. Large earthquake damages downtown Cushing, rattles residents across the state. Cushing's a little ways from Oklahoma City, not that far, but not exactly right here. But I did feel it. It says the U.S. Geological Survey initially reported a quake as a 5.3, but then they downgraded it to a 5. The earthquake happened at 7:44 p.m., to be exact. Its epicenter was reported about 1 mile west of Cushing, 16 miles east-southeast of Stillwater, and 53 miles northeast of Oklahoma City, if you know where those areas are. The earthquake was less than 4 miles deep. A lot of times we don't have a lot of damage, but in this case there was some. The Cushing Fire Department told News 9 no one has been taken to the hospital due to injuries at this time, but downtown Cushing suffered significant damage. The State Emergency Management Office said there has been major damage reported at a senior living apartment complex in Cushing. The American Red Cross has set up a shelter there for people that need some help, and they canceled school today there. So I was sitting, I remember, you know, I was sitting in a chair in my room. I was looking at a book, and then you feel that that sway, and I looked over at my wife, and we were like, yep, that's an earthquake. And then we waited for the kids to run in, but they didn't. They didn't even notice it, so.
Are we the national leader in earthquakes now?
We are.
That's amazing. You would have never guessed Oklahoma in the middle of the country would have that.
No, it's I never felt an earthquake here or ever in my life until, what was it, 5 years ago or so when they first started, somewhere in there. And now it's pretty common. So a lot of times, though, we don't get damage, but this one did cause some damage. So hopefully not too much. They have to go around today and check the roads and bridges. And make sure, because, you know, you just because something doesn't collapse doesn't mean there's not structural, you know, problems. So anyway, yeah, all kinds of things here in Oklahoma. It used to just be tornadoes, but now it's earthquakes, too.
Yeah, the children probably aren't too concerned about the damage if they have the day off from school. They're probably thrilled about that.
Yeah, that's probably does happen in some areas, but the idea of getting a day off of school because of an earthquake is like, I never would have dreamed of that as a child.
Yeah, especially here. I mean, like you said, we really haven't had an earthquake that I can remember at all besides the last several years, and that's about it.
Yeah. So, of course, a lot of people think it's because of fracking.
They will blame that, yeah.
So who knows? It could be,
but why hasn't it caused a problem before?
It's a good question, and there's a lot of back and forth on it. So I don't have an answer for you. But anyway, it was interesting last night with that earthquake. We got some really good listener emails over the weekend. We always appreciate those. You can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. And thanks for sending those in. We tweeted a couple of things that were sent. I made a passing comment that I'd like to get a pictograph. And so some people sent in some things. I should have said gold bullion. I said the wrong thing. Turkey sandwiches. No, that would be weird to get a turkey sandwich in the mail. But we got some interesting ones, and we've tweeted them at KPCGFM. You can look at them if you want to. One is a drawing that someone did of us, you and me, and it's actually pretty accurate. Although I think Grant is a little more handsome than his picture, but it was pretty close.
Well, my dad's emailed both of us saying that my head is larger than yours in the picture, which is accurate in real life.
That is accurate. physically speaking, his head. We're not talking about ego necessarily. But so that was great. We appreciated that. And so you can see that if you want to at KPCGFM. There, that's where our Twitter is. And then we also got a nice one from a listener up in Canada. And we tweeted that as well. And it's a diagram of where you can find all the different stars and the constellations. It's really cool. So
that's interesting.
You can find that. We tweeted it, and it's pretty neat because I know my kids, especially as they get older and they learn about it in school, they're very excited about, you know, going out and seeing if they can see the different constellations and things. And I'm not great at it. I can always find like the Big Dipper usually, or maybe Orion's Belt. I think some of the really obvious ones, but then a lot of them I don't know. And it's always funny how you can look at the groupings of the stars and they say, oh, well, clearly that's a bull chasing a, you know, whatever. I'm like, I don't see it. I see a couple of bright spots.
Yeah, is it upside down? Because I'm not getting the same picture you are. And, our caricature is so good, it's even our logo now on the website.
It is. We changed it up, so we really appreciated that. It's pretty cool. No, you know, it's good. The person that did it was really good, because I have seen people that draw that type of thing for, you know, like they'll go out and they'll be a street vendor and they'll have people pay to draw their pictures. And I've seen some and I'm like, that doesn't look, it looks like it could be anybody, but these are pretty good.
So. I actually got my first ever caricature on my honeymoon several months ago. My wife and I in a picture, and the guy did a great job. And I just started wondering why I've never hired a caricature artist before, because it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Even to just watch the guy draw you.
How long did it take?
Oh, must have taken him 5 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
Just really quickly drew it, colored it, that's it.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. It's fun, yeah. I imagine they would do pretty well, and I guess it's if you've got that talent, you know, it'd be pretty neat. It would be fun, actually. I wonder if you can hire them for, like, parties. You know, you have a get-together, and you're like, hey, they'll draw your picture. I bet they do that.
That's an amazing idea. They could probably make some good money off of that.
Yeah, and who wouldn't like that? Unless you kind of don't like the way you look, but it's supposed to be kind of a funny drawing. It's not supposed to be accurate.
I always feel like my caricatures are extremely flattering. Like, mm-hmm. the picture of me looks better than I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a sharp, angular jaw in that picture, and I actually have a rather fat jowl. It's not there in the picture.
Well, yeah, that would be an interesting practical joke to have a group of people and have the artist draw everybody a little better than they look, and then have one guy where he draws them way worse. Everyone's like, this guy was amazing. It's really accurate. You're like, what? Come on now.
Just mental warfare.
Yeah, just mess with somebody.
Just really mess up his mind.
I was over the weekend, I stopped by one of the local malls briefly, and every once in a while you'll overhear something that is kind of funny. So I actually heard this over the weekend. There was a lady on the phone. She was on a cell phone, and I was walking by, and she was having what I believe to be an argument with an ex-boyfriend, it appeared. And this is her exact quote. I wrote it down because I wanted to remember it. She said, "Think about what you had with me. Think about what you have now. That's what's up." So, I don't know what his response was. I don't know what you say.
His life must have spiraled into a black hole ever since she left or he left.
I don't know. But anyway, talk about the drama. That's where people get movie script ideas.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. Good to know. What's up? That's what's up.
That's hilarious.
Oh, very interesting. There is some headlines today that are kind of interesting as well. And sometimes there's headlines and you think, I don't think they really thought this through. And this is one of them. I don't think they really thought this through. Not necessarily the headline, but the action. This is from the Drudge Report, and they've got all their, you know, political email or headlines. And this is a headline. It says, "After crushing Trump, after crushing Trump pinatas, Mexicans hope he loses." So they crushed pinatas of Donald Trump. Now, the thing about that is pinatas are full of delicious candy. And you like pinatas, and you like to crush them because of all the goodness that comes out from them. It's a good thing. Like, no one's ever upset at the pinata. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. So they made a pinata, and I don't know what they put in it, but it seems like they didn't really think that one through. I get the what they're going for, but pinatas are a happy delight. But they're trying to do this in a negative way. I don't think they thought it through.
Well, another problem with that is the headline implies the Mexicans who bashed the pinatas were only hoping he would lose after they hit the pinatas. Like, the pinatas specifically are what made them upset enough to not want him to win. Right. I'm pretty sure they were already mad before they bashed his pinata and not after that.
Right. Only after we broke this. Maybe that's what happened. They broke the pinatas. There was nothing inside. They're like, we hope he loses.
Trump had no substance inside.
There's no candy in there. They found all the emails. They fell out. All the missing emails were in the Trump pinata. So all kinds of weird things people do when it comes to election time. Tomorrow's the election, Tuesday. And we're going to be live with the election. We're going to talk about it as it happens. As it happens, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 7 to whenever. So we'll see how that goes.
We'll be here however long it takes, unless it's too late.
Yeah. We won't go on too long about it, but we thought it'd be interesting to do it live and kind of comment on it as it happens. So sometimes you don't want to hear what all the commentators have to say, and you'd rather listen to us. So you could do that. You could turn on the TV and then turn down the volume.
Well, you can bet we would probably be a lot more light and loose than some of these people who are seriously invested in the outcome.
They are very invested. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. A lot of people are predicting a very close result. And then, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people that are thinking we're going to wake up Wednesday morning without knowing who won. And then what happens? Then it goes through a process. Mm-hmm. So, but there is a lot of, man, people just want it to be over with and to move forward. But then it's like this big hurdle of let's get this over with. But then what happens after that? That's not good either. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to Abraham Blondeau about that a little more. He's got an article at thetrumpet.com today about the election. He'll be coming in later on. Here's an interesting headline from RT.com. Absolute madness. German town to separate refugees, residents with barrier taller than Berlin Wall. So the tear down this wall and now build that wall up. They want to keep some separation.
It really does seem like one of the last resorts that they have because, I mean, the residents feel like they're being terrorized by the refugees.
Yeah, they do, and there's been evidence of that happening. The controversial 4-meter, that's 13.1 feet, and no, I didn't figure that out. It was written down. Barrier will stand higher than the Berlin Wall, located in the Munich suburb of Neuperlach Süd. I don't know if that's correct, ballpark. The stone wall is aimed at dividing the town's families from around 160 unaccompanied child refugees who are set to move into nearby shelter currently under construction. 160 child refugees. Now, they don't give the ages there, so that could be teens, it could be a lot of things, but I suppose they'll have somebody at the shelter to kind of watch them, but what are they going to do? Roam around? I mean, that's a bad situation.
Yeah, I think the idea of immigrants is to bring in people who can actually help out the country that is hosting the immigrants. But when they're children, and it sounds like unaccompanied even,
yeah.
How is that really going to help the country? If they're building a wall in the middle of a town because they're worried about the refugees, then you know that they're not really there to help too much.
Well, you know, a lot of the problems that happen even in the United States or anywhere where you have young people that don't have parents or they don't have they're not around, whatever the case might be, very often. A lot of times they end up getting into gangs because they need some sort of family-esque unit, some type of structure. And so that happens a lot in a lot of parts of the world. And I would think they would be prime targets for, you know, being radicalized, as they say. They're just kids. They need some sort of guidance, some sort of direction. Can you imagine that? You know, the neighborhood you live in or I live in, if all of a sudden you got like something in the mail saying, oh, by the way, we're going to dump off 160 kids here in this shelter and, well, see you around. You know, that would be very difficult for any community to deal with.
Yeah, it's implausible. And the residents there must just be shocked and infuriated that that could even be happening. I mean, it makes no sense. There is no like practical positive outcome for something like that. Again, they're building a wall because the refugees what, pose a threat, probably?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you can just imagine the possibilities. They say the wall's construction is being seen as a compromise between angry residents and the local government after seven locals previously filed a complaint against the shelter. Those against the shelter have argued that the site will cause the value of their homes to plummet, which is another great point. I hadn't thought of that. And have raised fears about noise coming from the site. And those are two very legitimate concerns, but they're even kind of smaller concerns in a way. The nearest houses to the shelter are located 25 meters, or 82 feet, of course, away, and are separated from the construction by trees and a road, according to the report. The plan to build the wall was agreed to by residents and the Munich Administrative Court in June. While some locals have praised the wall's construction, others have slammed it, including Deputy District Chairman Guido Buchholz, who called it absolute madness. So they're trying to find this compromise, which is to build the wall. It might help somewhat, but who wants a giant wall behind their house either?
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, and the people who are slamming it, I would like to see where they actually live. How close do they live to that refugee center if they're just totally in favor of it? Anyone who lives close by would at least have a concern pop into their head without them preparing for that.
Absolutely. And that's a really good point, even, say, here in the United States. A lot of times people making decisions about immigration, they're not directly affected by it in the sense of living next to it. So they should go back to the people that are actually affected and say, what do you think about this? That would be a just way to at least look at the situation or the possibilities.
Yeah, but the problem with that is almost every time the people on the ground contradict what the leaders already had in mind to do. And even if they found out from the people on the ground that what they were doing was a bad idea, they'd still go ahead with it. That there's just an arrogance in all levels of government now like we've never seen. And it's the case in Germany. It's the case here. Immigrants are really posing a threat to a lot of Germans there. That is not, again, that's not a racist thing to say. That's just what's happening right now.
Sure. And so it's interesting. And, of course, if that even ties into a story you're going to talk about later about the voting here in the U.S., that there's something going on there with some of the illegal voting. So
yeah, and there's so many other problems that we don't even have time to talk about, but even the refugee centers themselves are just squalid, filthy places where people are assaulting each other or relieving themselves in the corner of the public room, and it's just a disgusting, unhealthy, unsafe place.
Yeah, and really, I mean, anybody, you take 160 people from any walk of life and just kind of, especially young people, not a lot of supervision, jam them into a building, you're going to have problems. I don't care where they come from.
Yeah, that's just what's going to happen. Sure. We're not singling out any race or any nationality for that.
Yeah, just not a great idea. So you see more and more of these stories coming out of Germany. More pressure is being put on them, and the residents are not happy about it. And I think we can understand why that's the case. Here's an interesting story. This is from The Federalist, and they talk about what's going on here in the United States in regard to religious liberty being under attack. We've talked about this some. The Trumpet's written about this a lot. Where, you know, there are some laws saying if you in any way discriminate or infringe upon somebody else's rights as they see it, that's hate speech. And the thing that gets interesting is that some religions say, look, the Bible says such and such about this or that. And the other side says, well, that's hate speech. So it becomes a religious, you know, religious freedom, hate speech, what are we doing here? So all that's going on. So what's happening now is there's a little bit of a pushback against what the government's trying to do there. Religious liberty is under attack, and so the author of this write-up at The Federalist is saying religion needs to stand up for its rights. And so, but he's lumping kind of everybody into one group. He says, on upholding religious liberty, we are all Catholics. That's the title. And so he has quite a long write-up, and it's pretty interesting if you have time, it's at The Federalist. But his last two paragraphs are really interesting, just to see the pushback against what the government's doing. It says, during Russian occupation of East Germany, the Soviets built the Berlin Wall to keep Western culture away from East Berliners. To show solidarity with the people of Berlin, President John F. Kennedy went to Berlin, the Berlin Wall, and said, Ich bin ein Berliner, that is, I am a Berliner. And, of course, he said it wrong. And I think what he actually said was, I'm a jelly-filled donut. It was a famous mispronunciation.
Oh,
but
no.
Everybody got the point. And donuts are delicious, so it was kind of a win-win. But today, continuing with this article here, today cultural Marxism is turning the so-called wall of separation of church and state into a Berlin Wall against the Catholic Church. The wall being built against Roman Catholics by attacks on their religious liberty is being built against us all. He says the demise of their religious freedom is the death of ours. And so he says, no matter what your faith or religion or whatever, he says, it's time for each of us to say, Ich bin ein Katholischer, that is, I am Catholic. Or perhaps better in Latin, Ego sum Catholicus. So I probably butchered that, but you get the point. So interesting. There's this pushback against it. But hang on, though. Not everybody is Catholic, though. That's where it gets interesting, because it's not like religion is one thing. There's a lot of different religions out there. And religious liberty and freedom says you're free to not only be pushed around by the state, but you're also free to not be pushed by another religion. So this gets interesting.
Yeah, there's a fine line there between really giving liberties to all types of religions or just turning that into too much liberty for one type of religion in that it actually imposes itself on others. And we know historically that religion does have that tendency.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really good write-ups on the Trumpet about some of that history. And just it's an interesting push one way and then push the other way. And so historically, if you look, you know, we all like religious liberty and freedom. That is a great, great benefit here in the United States. But if it becomes where it's just one sort of religion, historically that's been a problem. There's been wars over that type of thing.
Yeah, it has. I think the Catholics are probably the last group that actually needs our support or our help, because they have proven themselves very willing to defend themselves and very capable of that.
It's so interesting to see just the way these the back and forth goes. Some people want to do away with all religion, and some say no. We should have religion, but it should be mine. And that's where it gets interesting. So interesting write-up at the Federalist. You can take a look at that if you want to. You know, a lot of times in the election years, they talk about wasted spending. That's a problem. You know, every candidate comes in and says, I'm going to trim the fat. I'm going to get rid of all the excess of spending. But oftentimes that doesn't happen. And there's a case where this excess spending is just insane. Of course, this is happening. New York Post. Teacher who earns nearly six figures to do nothing sues the city to get back to work. If you can believe that, here it is Monday. Everyone's getting back to work. Some people love their jobs. Others are like, eh, it's a job. And some people are getting paid to do nothing. It says a teacher who sits in lounges and libraries doing nothing all day, sometimes even napping, is challenging the city to make him earn his $94,000 salary. He's suing them to allow him to work. He's getting paid. He says, I come to work every day, sit down, and do nothing, said David Suker, who spent 15 years helping at-risk teens in the Bronx earn a general equivalency diploma, or GED. He's 48 years old. He complains that he is, quote, warehoused in the absent teacher reserve, a pool of educators without permanent jobs that cost an estimated $100 million a year. Right now, there are 1,304 mothballed city department of education staffers in this absent teacher reserve. They pay $100 million a year to pay them to do nothing.
Oof. And that's just in case a teacher doesn't show up without any warning, where you couldn't even have time to arrange a substitute? How does that work?
Well, it's interesting to see what they're doing here. In this case, this one teacher we're talking about in particular, he is a fired Army veteran. They fired him. He was an Army veteran. Let me get that straight.
Okay.
They fired him. He had been an Army veteran. He is an Army veteran. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder after he made news as an Occupy Wall Street protester who clashed with police. So he's got this military background. He's got PTSD. And he got in trouble because he was out there as an Occupy Wall Street protester who clashed with the police. He appealed his firing in court and won, paying a $7,000 fine. So they said, well, you can't fire the guy. But instead, they didn't return him to his old job. They just put him in this room and said, sit there. So there are teachers that they don't want anymore, either because of some sort of disciplinary action or in some cases the school's just closed down or because they didn't have the money or whatever. But they can't fire them, so they mothball them. 1,304 teachers. And they just come every day and they sit in a room or wherever they're placed around the city and they get paid. But they come sit there. And they're getting paid almost $100,000 a year. It's $100 million total for these teachers.
And they're not even, they don't even have the chance to do anything on a given day. They're just always going to be doing nothing.
Right. They are, wow. They're like fired but paid. Like, we don't want you to do anything, but we can't fire you, so we're just going to pay you to do nothing. Phew. Which is a weird spot to be in. And on one hand, I suppose, you'd say, well, I guess I like getting paid, but who wants to sit around all day and do nothing? And then, of course, all those people that are actually actively looking for work and are qualified teachers, and not to say these aren't, but they had their issues, whatever, they're looking for work, and they can't get a job. And then you got these guys that are getting paid $100 million in total to just sit there and do nothing. It's just, what a weird system in every direction.
Yeah, it is. It seems like maybe he could use his days to help out the school anyway. Maybe he could just bring his own paint to school and start painting the walls and just make himself useful even against the school's will. Because, I mean, paying someone to sit there all day, that really does deteriorate everything about you. I mean, that makes your mind go blank and tears down character after a while when you're not doing anything all day.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's problems on every side of this situation. They say, you know, originally they set this up to help teachers that when schools were downsized or closed, they could be there for a while until maybe they could get them some other work or whatever. It's kind of a safety net for them. But it's become a dumping ground for those that they want to fire, but they go to court and say, no, you can't fire me. And the court says, well, you know, you can't fire them. So they just dump them in this space, not that it's the same space, but you know, wherever they put them in this grouping of people, and pay them. So the courts at the end of the day are probably kind of the main reason here, because they're saying, well, you can't fire this person. Well, what are you going to do with them if you can't fire them, but you don't want them around, and you've got to pay them? I think it goes back to probably the court rulings.
Yeah, that does really make things difficult, especially for the teachers who are just stuck there. And seems like this guy, at least, would like to teach people. He would like to make an impact on people's lives in a positive way, and he really can't. Who knows? Maybe he had a legitimate reason for being fired, but I don't really know the details about that. But still, I mean, there are plenty of people out there who would love to be working right now and can't, and then there's people who are getting paid but can't work still. Maybe he could make good use of that by helping out the school or by having some sort of in-depth study that he wanted to do and just get paid for that.
It's interesting because he got in trouble for being an Occupy Wall Street protester, but yet he's getting paid almost six figures to do nothing.
Got in trouble.
Okay. Right, because of he clashed with police and he was out there, and so they wanted to fire him, but the court said they couldn't, and so it is a tangled web. It's hard to keep everything in place, but yeah, it's really a strange situation. So he's actually become sort of what he's protesting. You know, like, they've got all the money and they don't do anything. It's like, well, you get all the money and you don't do anything.
That's probably the only reason he's upset. I'm sure most teachers, if they didn't have to do anything and still get paid, would be actually fine with that. But maybe he realizes the hypocrisy of his position right now.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we probably in this nation, the United States and a lot of Western nations, probably take school for granted in a lot of ways that, well, you know, just go to school. But I even saw a story, I think it was last week, that here in Oklahoma, some of the school districts have to go to 4 days a week because they don't have the money to go 5 days because of the oil prices dropping and the budget all of a sudden turned on its head and that surplus became a huge deficit. And so, you know, they have a 4 day school day, but they have to go longer. So it's a longer 4 days because of the money to run the buses, the money to do everything. You know, growing up, that wasn't even a thought. Ah, public school, you go to school. Yeah, they come pick me up on the bus, I go to school. You know, tax dollars pay for it. But once you start losing money, all of a sudden, that education's not guaranteed. So it's changing, and it's interesting.
Yeah, and those four long days turn into four really long days. If you're involved in an after-school club or sport, then you're going to be out till at least 9 at night just because of school-related activities a lot of the time. And And really, I actually know for a fact that a lot of these educational issues in this state are huge parts of the upcoming voting.
Right.
A bunch of different issues about the state's education and how it's really not up to the right standard.
That country singer that's famous from around here, of course, that's about a million of them, right? Mm-hmm. But Toby Keith?
Right.
He's in one of the commercials for, I think he's, I can't keep it straight, one of the bills that they're looking at.
Exactly.
And he says some stuff about kids and everything. But the thing, the only thing that I really paid attention to, he has this really scruffy beard. And I thought he couldn't trim it for the ad. Like it's all discombobulated. It's all over. And maybe that's on purpose to show like he's an everyman. Because he's kind of standing like on a fence and there's a horse behind him, you know. And
such a rugged man.
Out on the ranch, you know. But I thought, well, you know, you got the commercial shoot today. You think you could have trimmed up the beard just a touch.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the biggest issue with this whole teachers being mothballed thing is that really the schools themselves aren't having to pay that extra money. It's really usually these schools are publicly funded, so the taxpayers are paying for it, the government is paying for it, and you know, it's not like some small business is paying it. It's everyone else who has to pay for
it. Right. It's $100 million a year. Think about what you could do with that money. Mm. How you could help some other area. So pretty interesting story. Of course, that's happening out there in I think it's in the New York area.
If it was a small business, actually, they would still find a way to have that person doing something. But because the schools themselves aren't paying the teachers to do nothing, then they have no reason to make the teachers do something at all. It's not their money that's being wasted.
Yeah. It's really a strange situation there with the teachers. So kind of interesting story. You can read the rest of that at the New York Post if you'd like to. There's even a picture of the guy taking a nap in the library. Oh,
they caught him.
They caught him.
He's probably not too happy about that.
Caught him snoozing. Oh, boy. Yeah. Can you imagine that? You know, your buddies are like, so busy day tomorrow. And you're like, yeah, probably go nap, I guess.
They're like, awesome. Yeah, what a job.
Be so boring. It's like solitary confinement, but you get to go home at night. Why even show up? Why don't you just stay home?
Yeah.
Do you have to report to the room? Like, what is he, five? I mean, can he do what he wants?
It's pretty sad if he actually has to be there, even though he's not doing anything at all.
Yeah, it's really strange. Maybe he could at least remodel the building or something.
Exactly.
I don't know what he's doing. Yeah. Key David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. A couple of programs for you today from the archives. And also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He had quite a few good listener emails today. And it goes through those, and so it's always interesting to hear what the viewers are, or the listeners, are impacted by. And, I mean, technically you could kind of view it. You can look at the website and just view the site. Nothing happens on it, but you could watch the line, I guess, of the audio.
I guess there is also a Trumpet Daily TV program on the website. I'm not sure they're always the exact same, but
there's variety there. Yeah. But anyway, a lot of good listener emails today. Make sure you listen for that. And if you can't catch it live or the replay, you can always get the archives at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com as well. Dwight Falk with you here today, Grant Turgeon on Trumpet Radio Live. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. Also, email anything you'd like to send to comments@kpcg.fm. We really appreciate getting those from you. Abraham Blondeau stopping by in full-on black suit, black tie.
Navy.
Okay, it's dark in here.
Yes.
I was going to call you Johnny Cash.
Well, I probably sound like him if I sang. So.
He had a deep voice, that's for sure.
Or end up in prison, one of the other.
He did spend some time in somewhere.
Anyway. The old slammer.
Yeah, the old slammer. Before we get to your story, Abraham, there's a story you guys are going to find interesting. Because, you know, everybody likes a little brew now and then, a little beer, if you're of age. It says you can now toast to the Iron Age with a 2,500-year-old brew. A team of researchers worked with a brewery in Milwaukee, of course, to create an ancient beer from the remnants of the alcoholic beverage that were found at an Iron Age burial site in Germany. Though the acidic soil has dissolved the skeleton, archaeologists found metal weapons and a cauldron at the burial site. The cauldron, which dates back to between 400 to 450 BC, was full of an ancient mead when it was buried, according to the study.
Like a person? A mead?
No, like the beverage.
Oh, sorry.
The dead man in Tumulus 17, Grave 6, had been sent into the afterlife, they say, as they would see it, not only with his weapons, but with about 14 liters of an alcoholic beverage that he could have used to establish himself as an important person in the next world.
14 liters.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Just the idea that that would be something that would help you, you know? I don't know what realm they think they're coming up
quickly
in.
Quickly make friends. Yeah. Hey, guys.
I've got a lot of beer here. Is anyone?
It's a popularity contest.
I guess.
Contest in the next life.
What did you bring us from the other world? Mead. The team worked to analyze the alcoholic remnants, and they derived a recipe for the ancient brew. And the alcoholic drink was probably a type of mead known as braggot. Arnold told the station, the brew made from a blend of barley and honey also contained meadow sweet, often found in prehistoric mead, and mint, the researchers said. And so Milwaukee's Lakefront Brewery then worked with researchers' recipe to recreate the brew. And it tastes just like Miller Lite, which is surprising.
It does?
No, I'm kidding. I hope it's better than that.
Totally fooled me on that.
All these
Milwaukee,
years,
I thought you were serious.
Yeah, well, that's where I pulled the reference from. Hopefully, it's a little bit
of honey, a little bit of mint. Sounds pretty nice.
It actually does sound really good.
I think I would like to question the archaeologists though, because if they found this dead body next to 14 liters of this beer, what do you think caused his death? I don't know. Of course, he's buried there, but. You never know. Maybe that was the source of his downfall, so they just got rid of it and buried it with him.
Yeah, maybe it's like you should never remake this toxic brew.
Too late.
Yeah, that's it's interesting that they did that and they tried to figure out how they made it. But it does sound actually pretty good. A little bit of honey in there and so forth.
I'm going to order some, for real.
Yeah. That's another one of the, I don't know if they're, they say it's available to taste during the 6th Annual Wisconsin Science Festival. Who goes to a science festival to taste the beer?
Only the people who know where to go to the right science festival.
Do you drink it out of a smoking beaker?
A lot more people will go to a science festival this year, probably.
Anything in Milwaukee has beer with it. I could say that because I'm from that area. No matter what it is. Library day, beer.
Yeah, well, I know the first rule they teach kids is never to drink out of test tubes because you don't know what's within them. It could be something
dangerous.
That's
true, yeah.
It's one of the first things you teach kids when you're in science, so... maybe they're breaking all the rules now, but it would be neat though because it would be a historical experience.
Yeah, probably pretty tasty too. So I don't know. You might check that out. The write up was at Fox News, so maybe if you want to order it, maybe you can. I don't know if they're going to make what would you call it? Iron gut beer. It's from the Iron Age.
I would call it Iron Man.
Iron Man. There
Just
you go.
Iron Age beer would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Abraham, you've got the top story today at thetrumpet.com, and you're here to talk about it. The untold story of Election Day 2016. No matter who wins, America will lose. That sounds pessimistic.
Slightly.
What do you got for us?
So with this article, if anyone who's covering the election, most of the articles center on what will happen when such and such wins. If Trump wins, what will happen? If Hillary wins, what will happen? And most of the articles do focus on if Trump wins, it will be it's the end of democracy. That there's a lot of people think even both of them are a threat. I've seen the same thing with Hillary, too. People writing articles about her. A lot of corruption and just people putting the blame of a sudden American downfall on the president to come.
Right.
On the one that will be elected on Tuesday. But with the article, what I want to point out is look over the past 8 years of President Obama's administration, and to show just how just the what they've done to this nation in the past 8 years, and really build it off of America Under Attack and Great Again, the two books by Gerald Fleury, and just show and try to document and give an overview of how much America has really changed in the past 8 years, and that it doesn't really matter who wins, even if it was someone else other than these two candidates. America is already on the downturn because of the past 8 years.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because some of what has transpired over the last 8 years is starting to bear fruits that people are experiencing in their lives. Most notably probably is Obamacare. And there's quite a few stories that have come out recently where people are like, I can't afford this. You know, no one really bothered to look at it too much, I suppose. Some maybe did, but I think a lot of people did not. There's this idea that, well, it's free health care. What's wrong with that? Oh, no. Au contraire. Check out the pricing. It's massive. I read a story this weekend where there was a family of four, and the article was focusing on how it's just going to destroy the middle class. Absolutely. I mean, if you're under a certain amount of income, you can get some help from the government, and it won't be quite as much, even though you're still paying. And if you're wealthy, well, you can probably afford whatever. But those in the middle class can't. And this example had a family of four making somewhere $70,000-$80,000 a year, and they were going for the bronze plan, which was the cheapest, $1,300 a month, $12,000 deductible. That's twice what they pay on their mortgage every month. They don't have it. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to force everybody below the poverty line to get on government subsidies? $1,300 a month for literally no coverage. I suppose you could say it's catastrophic coverage. $1,300 a month? Who's got that? And even if you do have it, don't you want to save your kid's future? Or don't you want to take that vacation? Or don't you want to go to Walmart and buy some stuff, you know, to keep the economy going, right? It's just, it's going to destroy people, and I think people are starting to notice it. So it does tie back into what you're saying, that, like, it's not about what's going to happen tomorrow. Look what's already happened. This tomorrow will certainly aid in it one way or the other, but it's already happening.
Yeah, and with the Obamacare there, I saw a speech, or I read about it, a speech by President Obama, and he said only a handful of people are going to be impacted by the increases in the premiums.
Must be a giant's hand, because it would scoop up everybody in America.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people were saying. We're like, and they said, oh, that's true, only if handful means millions.
Right.
Because it's literally millions of people. So, but yeah, that's just one small part. I mean, in the article, I mainly focused on how he has expanded executive powers and also eroded America's foreign policy abroad. And I think it's a really interesting contrast on how in American society, the government has become bigger, stronger, and they're really getting control of people's income. They're getting control of people's lives through all these different, even in education, now challenging people's beliefs on many fundamental religious issues, etc. But in foreign policy, we've seen the exact opposite, where America's losing grip on its place in the world, and they're actually retreating. And so you have this iron man at home and a weak man abroad in this picture of America. And so I think, like you said, and what I point out there is I think Donald Trump has been so successful is because he is capitalizing on people being afraid of what has happened over the past 8 years. Because if you look, the symptoms are clear. And he's really capitalized on that. But he doesn't really offer any solutions either. And that's the dichotomy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess his general solution is, I'm a pretty smart guy, so I'll fix it and don't worry about how.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, I'm surprised that that hat has been so popular.
Right.
It's one of the ugliest hats I've ever seen, the Great Make America Great Again hats. But somehow, I don't know, it's starting to work for some reason.
It's simple and it's, I don't know,
It's like a hat your grandpa would wear when he's mowing the lawn.
Right.
Yeah.
People are just so proud of the slogan, and they would face the confrontations just because they like him so much.
He's kind of like, we've talked about this before, he's sort of like the American Duterte, like you see in the Philippines, where he's just gonna say what he thinks. And you know, I think after so many years of just smooth talk but a lot of negative actions, people are, I don't know, more receptive to somebody that's just gonna call it out and not be bullied. I think people like the fact that he won't be bullied by the left, where the left's been bullying people for years. And so at least somebody's not being bullied. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to solve anything, but I think people are responding to that at least.
Yeah, and I think once we look back on Donald Trump's campaign, whether you love or hate him, I think everyone will have to admit he did almost successfully outmaneuver every single politician in America. Despite how polished and maybe how strong in character all the other Republican candidates are, he won the nomination. He's one vote away from being president. So it doesn't matter what, if you love or hate him, I think we do have to just realize how successful he's been. And he has had a very successful campaign. You can disagree with how he's done it. That's not the point. But just, he is very successful, and he outsmarted almost everyone that wanted to bring him down. And so he really did tap into a force in the public, and that's really his strength. But it's also dangerous because on the weekend I did see an article where militias around the country are doing basic training, close quarter combat training, because they expect civil unrest after the election, the outbreak. So they're getting ready. Hmm. So that's a little disconcerting. But there's also groups on the other side, like the Black Lives Matter and other more radical groups as well, who have promised retribution if Donald Trump wins. So there's just a lot of layers to this election that are pretty scary. But the only reason that all that is possible is really because of what President Obama has done, giving radical groups a political voice, even supporting them from the White House. And it's there's just a lot of blame that should go there, and we shouldn't walk away on November 8th without recognizing how America has changed.
Well, it's interesting, too, because over the weekend there's quite a bit of a write-up about the hypocrisy of Hillary Clinton's campaign. She had a campaign stop, but she had Jay-Z come out, the rapper,
right.
Or as Australians say, Jay-Z. And unless it's another guy. And so he comes out and he does all of his songs, which I'm not very familiar with. But, you know, from what I read about it, all sorts of inappropriate references to women, racial slurs, et cetera, And Donald Trump's, he called it out for what it was. Like, well, you guys get all over me. Look at what this guy's saying. So it was funny because they quoted the lyrics in some of the songs, and they had to, you know, put all the asterisks in and everything because they can't write the word. And so they put all those in, and then, 10 minutes later, they said 10 minutes later, he came out and he said, you know, I support Hillary because I'm all about respect and respecting people or something like that. After he had just given this foul-mouthed concert where he insulted everyone, he said, I'm about respect. And I thought, well, that's what it's come to now. Can you imagine that years ago, you know, any of the great presidents that we had in this country, you know, Abraham Lincoln showing up with a vaudeville act or something. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a little more serious than the entertainment world.
It's almost to the point where the entire Democratic Party is just, they've gained the upper hand already in this country, but it seems like now they're just looking to see how contradictory, how absurd they can get before people start to realize that really we've gone way down as a nation. People are just asleep and continue to put those people in power.
This write-up that Abraham has, The Trumpet, it's the top story, the untold story of Election Day 2016. We're going to be here with you on Election Day 2016. We'll be live starting at 7-ish, 7 p.m.-ish tomorrow night, Tuesday night. So make sure you join us here on KPCG for that. We'll have some commentary as it unfolds. And stay safe here in our bunker. The bunker. No, hopefully everything's fine. Hopefully nothing bad happens. Of course, nobody wants to see that. But like you said, there is tension. This next story ties in with this. Grant, you've got it from WND.com. Video, Obama encourages illegals to vote. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. He had a videotaped interview with the Latin-oriented YouTube channel MeToo. That's MITU. I don't know exactly how you pronounce that, but the actress Gina Rodriguez asked Mr. Obama, or she said, many of the millennials, dreamers, undocumented citizens, and I call them citizens because they contribute to this country, are fearful of voting. So if I vote, will immigration know where I live? Will they come for my family and deport us?
Yes.
I would certainly hope so, but didn't sound like it from the president's answer. He said, not true. And the reason is, first of all, when you vote, you are a citizen yourself. So he's specifically talking about the actress who actually is legal. But then he said, and there is not a situation where the voting rolls somehow are transferred over and people start investigating you. The sanctity of the vote is strictly confidential. Really, it's strictly confidential. It's sanctity even for those who are voting illegally and getting away with it.
Right. That's the innuendo. You know, will I get in trouble if I vote illegally? No. So, what are you saying exactly? You know, it is not that he came out and said exactly like all illegals, you know, hear my voice, but he did pretty much say like no, nothing will happen, and. The sanctity of the vote. I mean, yeah, I guess that's your personal business, but that's why you're supposed to be identified as a citizen. Contributing to a nation doesn't make you a citizen. I traveled through certain nations in Europe and I bought stuff there. Am I a citizen of Europe? I contributed.
Maybe you picked up a piece of trash on the street and threw it out. You contributed to the environment a little bit that way.
I wore a Packer jacket and it was a sensation. People thought it was tremendous. Like, ah, Packers. I'm like, hey, and they're all around the world.
Wow.
So I contributed to the European nations.
It doesn't make you a citizen.
No, it doesn't. Not that I know of.
It certainly does not. And yet we have the president saying these things. Yeah, maybe he didn't specifically say, illegals, please come vote. which clearly would be an advantage for his party. But he is saying no one's going to be there watching you. No one's going to be there forcing you to produce an ID. No one's going to be there interrogating you after you come out of the voting room.
And that's been a real hallmark of his leadership, is that sometimes he doesn't directly say things, but you get the point.
Anyone who heard that would just think, yeah, well, I can easily get away with it, so why not try? And then he also, well, this now interjects with a point from Fox Business host Neil Cavuto. He says, I can't believe that I heard what I heard. The president isn't even questioning whether the person who is an illegal is voting, outside of reminding people that if you're a citizen, you vote. But it's very clear that the question that is being asked was about illegals voting and afraid that they might be reported to border security. You're illegal. You cannot vote. The president of the United States is saying, don't worry. No one will be spying on you, catching you. It's a clear implication that he would love it if those people went there and tried to vote.
Unless they voted for the other side.
Which is
then he'd be
hardly going to happen. Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's just, it is shocking to hear the president say that. I thought it was plain and simple. Only citizens can vote. And now we're basically letting people vote who shouldn't be. I mean, even he and Hillary Clinton have opposed voter ID laws because they don't want people knowing who is actually voting.
Isn't that the craziest thing, too? Because this is happening, and then they point the finger at the other side and say, well, Russia's trying to steal the election. Well, what are you talking about? Russia trying to steal anything? You're telling people that are illegally here to steal it. You're telling them to, in so many words, and then pointing the finger at the other side and, you know, warning about something else. It's hypocrisy. And that's what we see that quite a bit. That's one of the great accusations, right, that Donald Trump wins somehow, Russia is going to control everything, which I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But they're clearly here with this story Grant has, showing that, yeah, go ahead and vote. No one's gonna pay attention to you. What if you're not alive? Somebody put a sticker on one of the, I think it was Susan B. Anthony's grave, that says, I voted. They got in trouble for that, defacing a grave. And they should have. You shouldn't do that. But I think the point is, it's kind of out there.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the Democratic votes have mainly been minority, and minorities have been identified for the past few decades as the swing vote for the both parties. And George Will wrote a column saying that until the Republicans can appeal to the minorities, they'll never win another election. And you can really see President Obama knew who voted him into office, and over the past 8 years, you can really see him appealing illegal immigration, granting amnesty, trying to get them to be able to vote, because it really, they are a powerful force in this country because the demographics have changed so much. And so it is just really interesting when they say Trump building a wall is a danger to American values. Well, how about a president saying, oh, break the Constitution, it's fine because we need a Democratic president? I mean, that's more of a danger than any physical wall can ever be to this country. And that's really what he's saying.
Yeah, and this is what makes everything so sticky in terms of what is the actual result. Because both sides, if it's close, you know, probably already have all their arguments lined out for why they think the other side stole it. So if it is close, which a lot of people are expecting, it's going to be, you think this is bad, right? The lead up. What about the after the fact? It's going to be really interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, it is. There's going to be a huge conflict either way. He also went on to say that those of you who are legal and you're voting, you're not just voting for yourself. You're voting for all those friends, family members, classmates, coworkers, all of the illegals you know. You have to make your voice heard. This party is openly advocating anti-law practices, and yet I guess that's fine now. Is this really what we've come to where, all of your legal friends and family, make sure you speak up on their behalf.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. But, you know, I have seen some stories, too, where some of the minority votes actually go in the other way. So it could change. I mean, you never know.
It finally is shifting a little bit. But speaking of most of the minorities voting Democratic, if you think that's a coincidence, I would recommend watching Hillary's America. I saw that movie last night. It's by Dinesh D'Souza. And he pointed out how the inner cities are basically the newer form of a plantation, and how the Democratic Party has basically been making sure the blacks and the immigrants and the other minorities are put in there, and they're given jobs, they're given a place to live, but then they're also expected to vote Democratic in exchange. They've even had instances of Democratic greeting parties meeting immigrants in the airport, taking them to some slum in the inner city, giving them a job, and then showing up at their door and taking them to the voting station and making sure they vote Democratic. It's a huge racket.
Yeah, he's not popular, that guy. He's done a few films.
He's been put in prison, and they trumped up some like illegal campaign contribution charge,
right.
But he gave it anonymous. He gave the money anonymously and didn't know that he exceeded the limit. So clearly he wasn't trying to influence a candidate if he's not even telling the candidate that he gave the money.
You know what I'd like to see him do? Because he's pretty good at putting those documentaries together. I'd like to see him do a documentary on Michael Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Who likes to make documentaries about everybody else.
Shred that guy.
Yeah. He's always upset about capitalism. He lives in a giant mansion on a lake.
It's not possible under any other economic system.
No, it's not. Go to the island of the documentary makers where they all live in peace and harmony or wherever that is. Pretty interesting. So it's going to be a really interesting week ahead. We'll be with you here on Trumpet Radio Live and KPCG and, of course, at thetrumpet.com to keep you up to date on what's going on. Appreciate you being with us today on this Monday. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.